No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Lowe's knows you've got a job to do, and we help get it done. With the MyLowe's Pro Rewards program, eligible members save more. With volume discounts on qualifying orders through a quote of $2,000 or more. Join for free today. Lowe's, we help you save. Offer can't be combined with any other discount, contract, and or special pricing. Exclusions, more terms, and restrictions apply. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
Back with Vershawn Jackson on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
That's right. It's the captain, The Ticket, 93.7. We're talking to Coach Osborne. Coach, of all the 255 wins you won, what's the most memorable game?
Well, you know, it's kind of odd. I've heard other, I remember Woody Hayes saying he didn't remember the wins, but he remembered every loss. And that's true. You know, it's sad. But I would say one of the most memorable was 1978. You know, we lost to Oklahoma 5 straight years. The first 5 years I was the head coach, and that was not popular with fans, and it had kind of become a one-game season. You know, we could win 10 games or whatever and do pretty well and even be ranked in the top 10, but if we didn't beat Oklahoma, it was a bad year. And so people were getting pretty impatient, and they came up here. They were rated number one in the country. And we beat them 17-14. And I remember it was a strange game. We went ahead, kicked off to them, and a guy named John Rood, Tom Rood's brother, went down on the kickoff, and he hit Kelly Phelps, who had the ball, about the 15-yard line, and knocked the ball loose. It was one of the hardest hits I've ever seen. Mm. Kelly Phelps went over backwards so fast that the referee literally did not see the ball come out. And they ruled him down. And we recovered the ball about the 10 or 12 yard line. And the game was over because there's only 5-6 minutes left. Instead, they gave Oklahoma the ball. And Oklahoma starts driving down the field. And about the 5 yard line, Billy Sims had the ball. And one of our safeties hit Billy. Knocked the ball loose. Jim Pillen recovered it at nice. 3 yard line.
Yeah.
And we had about 2 minutes left, and we drove the ball out to the 50 yard line, held on to it, and won it. And all of a sudden, we were a lot smarter coaches. But the strange thing was, it took so much out of our team. I mean, it was the hardest hitting game I'd ever been around. And we knocked the ball loose a lot of times that day. And our players were exhausted. And the next week, Missouri comes up here. And we probably were a better team than Missouri, but they beat us.
Mm.
And it was a close game, and they beat us. And so then I go in the locker room, and it's the Orange Bowl calling. And they said, well, now we're going to have you play Oklahoma again in the Orange Bowl. And so we went from kind of being up here to going back. And we out-yarded Oklahoma by almost 200 yards. We had a couple turnovers. They beat us by 3 or 4 points down there. So it kind of ended up being a really good thing and then a negative thing. But at least we won the game. And from that game on, we more than held our own against Oklahoma. I mean, we lost some, but we won most of them. And then things went well. But so that game was a big game. And probably beating Miami down there in 94 and winning the national championship was a big game because I don't think people realize it, but I think Oklahoma or Miami had won 69 out of 70 home games over a period of 10 or 12 years. And I remember Howard Schnellenberger telling me, he said, you know, I think playing a northern team down here with the humidity in January probably gives us about a 10-point advantage. And I would say that's probably true. You know, if you just looked at the history book. And so it was a little bit of an uphill climb because that was their home field, you know. And we ended up playing them down there in their home field about four times. So anyway, that was a big game too. So, but the main thing is probably not the individual games. It's more the journey. It's more the relationship and the players, and our relationship. I know you have thought a lot of you over the years, and there's never a week goes by that I don't hear from some former players, and so that's probably the most satisfying thing about coaching is just the relationships and seeing guys move on with their lives, and probably 95% of them doing some really good things, and some that maybe didn't do so well getting their life in order and really making a great contribution now. And those are really interesting and satisfying things to see as well.
Why was the OU rivalry so fierce? Well, when did it? I mean, I get it, but when did it? No, I don't get it. I know what it felt like when I played, but when did that rivalry start? Why is it so fierce?
Well, I think in the old Big Eight Conference, there were, I believe, out of 30 consecutive years. Something like 30 years, the winner of that game, 29 times the winner of that game was the conference championship, either won or shared it. And quite often that game had some national championship implications. If you won it, you at least were in the hunt for a national championship. So I think that, but the thing that was interesting about the Oklahoma situation was that it was always a fairly healthy rivalry. You know, if you went down there, you weren't going to get booed, you weren't going to have people throw stuff at you. In the same way Oklahoma here, there was a fair amount of mutual respect because Oklahoma represented excellence, and I think to the Oklahoma people, Nebraska represented a certain level of excellence as well. And, you know, I don't know if you're aware of this, but over a 42-year period from 1962, when Bob Devaney came, to 2003, when Frank Solich left, Nebraska won 82% of our games. And the next team in winning percentage was Ohio State at 75%. We won about 60 more games than any other team during that period. So,
what do you think that was a test to, though? What did you do? How were we able to win that much like that?
I mean, well, I think looking back on it now, when you realize this is a sparsely populated state, you know, you don't have as many athletes within 100 miles or 200 miles as you do at Alabama or Florida State or Ohio State and so on. It took a kind of a confluence of things. We had a really good academic program here. Graduation rate was very high. Boyd Epley and the strength program maximized what we were doing. And we had a lot of continuity in our coaching staff. You know, a lot of those coaches were here for 18, 19, 20 years. And so we had a pretty good institutional memory of somebody showed us something defensively that we hadn't anticipated the first series, we could go back 7 years and say, well, Kansas did the same thing to us, and this is how we attacked it. And so having that continuity was helpful. And then I just think that over time, players developed an attitude of a certain amount of confidence and willingness to sacrifice. And we always were very physical football teams and took pride in that. And I think that that all helped. So, but there's really no reason, if you look at the mathematics of the numbers of people, geographical location, necessarily why that should have happened, but it did. And so people get used to winning, and they never quite get really used to losing. But I think the other thing that really fed into that was the fans, because if you think about the Iowa game this year, we're going to that game, 3 wins, 8 losses, and everybody was here. 86,000 were there, and they were into the game. And I would say most places in the country, you would have had a half-full stadium at the end of the year. So the fan base, there's no question that that has been a huge asset to Nebraska over the years. But that developed over time, because when Bob Devaney first came here, there were 35,000 seats. And the first few games, those seats weren't full. But by the end of 1962, they were full. And then we added on the stadium, and the fan base really began to develop. But it took time to do it.
Coach, we would have practice, and we'd go after it pretty good. But after practice, the majority of the time, if it was Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday, we were running gassers. Where'd you pick up that philosophy? And a lot of times we thought we had done a great job at running and doing stuff at practice real hard, but you still had us run gassers. Why was that?
Well, you mentioned earlier trying to be the strongest team in the fourth quarter. And Vince Lombardi one time said, fatigue makes cowards of us all. And, you know, when your legs are dead and when your lungs are hurting, you can't do the heroic thing. You can't pursue.
Lowe's knows you've got a job to do, and we help get it done. With the MyLowe's Pro Rewards program, eligible members save more with volume discounts on qualifying orders through a quote of $2,000 or more. Join for free today. Lowe's. We help. You save. Offer can't be combined with any other discount, contract, and or special pricing. Exclusions, more terms, and restrictions apply. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
Line to sideline or block downfield. And so we wanted to be better conditioned. And part of it was a weight program, and part of it was the way we ran practice. You may remember that we had 4 stations. We had 2 offensive stations, 2 defensive stations. And so we ran... The first offense ran 90 to 100 snaps, and the second offense ran 90 to 100 snaps. So there wasn't much drop-off between the first and the second team. And sometimes when we were way ahead in the fourth quarter, we'd put our second or third team in, and those guys would operate really well. But it developed depth, and so if somebody got hurt, we could have somebody step in and really become a good player and not drop off much.
That philosophy that you talk about when you say creating depth is not necessarily there right now, but how did you create that depth? How did that – because I can remember thinking when I was playing fullback, holy smoke, Corey Schlesinger is a long way away from me. I got 5 or 6 guys I got to go through to get to Corey. Not to say that I was a bad player, but why did guys want to come to Nebraska knowing that you had to work for it?
Well, I think a lot of it was the walk-on players because a lot of players, particularly in this state, would forego a scholarship someplace to come here and walk on. And part of it was because we treated them like we treated everybody else. We cared about them. We cared about their education. We cared about their physical health, cared about them as people. And we always saved 3 or 4 scholarships every year for any walk-on that became a first or second team on the depth chart. And so I think as time went on, I remember talking to Doug Coleman one time. I was sitting by him on an airplane. Doug was a highly recruited player from New Jersey, later played in the NFL. He said, you know, the thing that really impacted me was I began to see those walk-on players and how hard they would work and the kind of effort they'd put out. And he said that began to impact guys like me who were heavily recruited and came from other parts of the country. And because we began to realize that if we didn't really bow our necks and play hard, somebody's going to take our place. Mm. And it's going to be one of those walk-on guys. And so I think the walk-on thing really became something that was a real advantage for us. Now, lots of places have walk-ons. But I remember there was one school I heard of where the practice field was like a mile away from where they dressed. Yeah. So they always had a bus, and all those scholarship players would ride the bus down to the practice field. And the walk-on players walked the mile down and walked the mile back. And they were treated like second-class citizens. That would never have happened here. You know, we try to treat, and I think most, for the most part, a lot of players didn't know who was a scholarship player, who was a walk-on. I mm-hmm. mean, they're just players, and they're all treated pretty much the same.
When you think about, you know, you talk scholarship players, recruiting Nebraska, seemed like you always put a fence around Nebraska and said, I'm going to get the best guys from Nebraska first. Was that your philosophy?
Yeah, we always felt that we would identify the players that we thought had a chance to be good major college players. They may not be, I guess, in today's rating system, they wouldn't be 4-star or 5-star. Once in a while there would be. But they might be 2 or 3 stars or maybe even 1 star. But if we felt they had a good chance, we'd give them scholarships, and we'd give them scholarships immediately. Mm-hmm. And most of those guys would end up committing pretty quickly. And I remember I went through the roster the last 6-7 years I was a head coach. And we averaged 6 Nebraska scholarship players a year. And it was kind of interesting because 72% of those guys started for us.
Wow.
And if you looked at the average of guys from all the places around the country, and some of them were highly recruited, only 50% of those guys started for us. So we got a better return on investment from Nebraska players, even though they probably weren't as highly rated than some of the players from a distance. Because if you're really loyal and your family can watch you play and you've grown up watching a school since you're a little kid, you're probably going to put a little more into it. And now with the transfer portal, I mean, it's brutal because if players don't see themselves starting right away, mm-hmm. Within 2 years, they're gone. And so we have a difficult situation now because you have unlimited free agency. Mm-hmm. And in the NFL, you don't have unlimited free agency because you have a contract and you're going to be around. And yet in college, there's no contract. So every player can leave on a moment's notice. And so it's really become very difficult to coach. And now the NIL, theoretically, you don't have the NFL teams have a salary cap. There's no salary cap on NIL. So,
right.
So there's one team that's rumored to have paid $22 million in NIL money to the so-called best recruiting class in the country. I don't know if that's true or not.
Texas A&M?
Yeah, A&M. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, that's what people are saying. So, anyway.
Yeah, well, Coach, you know, do you think we could have handled, in my day, the NIL?
I don't think, Rashawn, I don't know what we'd have done with you if you had been driving around with $1 million in your pocket.
Yeah. I say that all the time. There's no way that the NIL would have worked back then. It's just not. You give a kid that ain't never had anything that came from, you know, where we came from, and then you say, okay, here, son, here's $100,000. Yeah. Your focus is off.
Yeah.
You know, how can they keep them focused in this day of NIL?
I really don't know. It's got to be one of the most difficult coaching situations I've ever seen. Yeah. And I personally feel that somehow they're probably going to have to make some changes. And I understand that coaches get paid a lot of money now, and coaches can leave, and they do. And people say, well, why shouldn't players do the same thing? Mm. But at least, like I said, in the NFL, you at least have a contract to determine that these people are going to be back, and you know that. And you have a salary cap where it's not just unlimited, where one guy, like maybe the quarterback at Oklahoma, is now part owner of three different businesses. And so he may be sitting on a board of three different boards and say, well, I can't go to practice today. I got a board meeting. So how do you do that?
Yeah, I'm just wondering. And I think that the transfer portal is – I don't think it's good for football because, to me, it's a breeding ground for quitting.
Mm-hmm.
It just gives you a way out. Was there a time in my career that I wanted to quit Nebraska? Yeah, but I had other guys that I could go to and say, hey, man, I'm thinking about quitting. Every single one of them, Cluster Johnson to be one of them, talked me and said, that ain't what you want to do. You want to finish what you started. It's not where you start, it's where you finish. And so I just think that the portal and the end. And Coach, you always tried to get us everything you could within power as far as monies goes. But I think this is just unprecedented. And I think if you put a pool together for all of the guys, I think it's better than just having one guy with $1 million. I just don't think. Yeah. I don't think it's good for football.
Yeah.
Not college football.
Well, let's make sure we put some context to what you just said when you said you just did everything you could to get money for us. What we did was we got you a job, and which was legal. And if you're eligible for a Pell Grant, we want to make sure you got Pell Grant.
But that's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the small stuff. Not that you were.
No,
it was payola back then. No,
there was nothing outside of the NCAA rules.
Right.
It is a difficult road to walk right now, and it's got to be hard for coaches. But I think you find that most players who have transferred and moved around, probably not all of them, but there's some of them would say, I probably would have been better off staying where I started out, because the grass is not always greener on the and I think you've got a lot of teams now that are approaching players. Once you put your name in the transfer portal, you got all kinds of schools calling you and street agents coming at you and saying, we can get you this, we can do this for you, and it gets to be kind of an auction block, which is probably not real healthy.
Yeah, I agree with you 100% on that one, Coach. 94, 95, 97. We're going to take a quick break because it's the top of the hour. But of those three teams, which team – I'm not going to say favorite, but which team gave you the most excited you about football? More of Coach Osborne, the Ticket, 93.7, the Captain. It's the first time.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.